We're beginning on the top of Kuf Mem and Gemal Amud Aleph. Yesterday we left off with the Gemara discussing a gift from a father to his children. One of those children was alive already, and the gift to the other children, or the other parties here, were children who were yet to be born. So it's clear with the yet to be born children that his gift fails. The question is, with the child that is already alive, his gift, which he equated to the gift that he's granting to those children that are yet to be born and fails, when he equates it to them, what happens to the gift to the child that is available or able to take possession of the gift at this moment? So the was a machlokas in the Gemara, and then the Gemara came to a conclusion that this is similar to you being koneh like a chamor, like you being koneh just like a donkey. So since just like a donkey has no ability to acquire, and if you're compared to, or if you are equated to a donkey, then it's clear that you can't acquire anything, just like the donkey doesn't acquire. And that'll be the same thing here with this case with the gift to the multiple children. So now the Gemara says, in the third line down on Kuf Mem Gimel Aleph, At V'chamor. What happens if someone gifts his property or some sort of gift to you and the donkey? So it's clear that the donkey can't take possession of it, but what happens to you? I mean that the you, when he grants it to this individual, he grants it to this party to take possession of it, but he includes the donkey, what does he mean? So there are three opinions here. At V'chamor Rav Nachman Mar Kana Mechsa, you get your half. And he meant 50% for you, 50% for the donkey. The 50% to the donkey obviously doesn't go through, so it's just you who is acquiring your 50%. Rav Amnuna Amar, lo amar klum. Rav Amnuna says he said nothing. Since obviously with the chamor he meant it not to be real, or not to be a actual gift. So too by you, he means that not to be an actual gift. Since you can't fulfill the part of the chamor, he's also not going to fulfill the part with you. And Rav Sheshet Amar, kanako. Says that the donkey becomes irrelevant, and you acquire everything. It says, basically, you get whatever the donkey doesn't take. Since the donkey doesn't take anything, you get everything. So you have these three opinions, Rav Nachman, Kana Mechsa, Rav Huna says nothing, and Rav Sheshet says Kana Kol, similar to, we had a three machlokas yesterday, similar between Rav Nachman, Rav Huna, and then Rav Sheshet. Then Rav Sheshet comes along and gives the most radical opinion, says that it works everywhere. Here we were talking about Kinyan Ubar, and over here by Ad V'chamor. So Amar Rav Sheshet is Mina Aminullah, similar to the Yeshiv Gemara, I've proved to you that my position is right, the Tanya. However, Brisa, Rav Yossi, Omer and L'chamar B'kishut El Pnimi. When it comes to Kishuim, when it comes to zucchini, or it comes to gourds, right, the inner parts of them are bitter, but the outside is sweet. So the bitter parts on the Fikach, Kushutoreim, Mosif al-Chitzon. When he takes off for Chuma, he adds on some from the outside, Shibo, Vitoreim, and then he takes the Chuma. So the explanation, we'll go with the Rashbam at first. The Rashbam explains that when it comes to these zucchini or these gourds, the inner part of the vegetable is bitter, and the outer part is the edible part, which is the sweet part. So here, if he has 50 zucchinis or 50 gourds, and he wants to be mafrish truma, he has to take 2% off, so he takes one of the zucchini, one of the gourds, as truma on this whole pile. But when he takes one of them off, each individual zucchini has parts of it, the inner part that's bitter, and the outer part that is sweet. So the Rashbam says, we're not sure if he takes off this particular vegetable to be the chuma on the whole pile. When he takes that vegetable, we don't know in that vegetable the ratio between bitter and sweet. We don't know if it's equal to the same ratio as bitter and sweet in the whole pile. So when he takes it off to be ensured that he's getting enough sweet or enough edible part to be the chuma, he's mosif. He takes a little more from the outside of another one of the vegetables, and together with this one piece of zucchini, this one zucchini or this one gourd, he'll be mafrish, so that he'll put excess sweet in there to ensure that he gets enough truma off. So based on that, the question is, listen, when he takes the zucchini, there are two parts to the zucchini. There's the bitter part in the middle, and then there's the sweet part on the outside. So what is truma, or what is that which we are concerned about here? That's just the sweet part, the edible part on the outside. The inner part is really almost irrelevant, because you're not going to eat it, and the truma that you're being mafrish is just in a ratio, but it itself, again, in the bitter side, is not really truma. So if that's the case, you have what we call at v'chamorhu. So that's what Rabbi Yishev says. Why does this work over here? It's at v'chamorhu. You're giving truma, part of which is edible, and part of which is inedible. I mean, that truma, which is sweet, is truma here. The part that is bitter is not truma. You're giving both of them as truma, and we're saying that it works for the sweet part, even though the bitter part doesn't work. So that's equivalent, the same as the case of at v'chamor. If that's similar, same as the case of at v'chamor, if you say like me, Rav Sheshet says that it works for everything, meaning that it makes the whole thing truma and it works, great. But if you say that it only works for mechsa, or if you only say it works for, doesn't work at all, according to Rav Huna, then why is there truma over here? Why is this functioning as truma? Why is this vegetable sufficient to be truma on the whole pile? It's missing a part. It's a missing a part of it because you're not giving the whole vegetable as truma. You need one out of the 50. If it's only half of it that's going to be good as truma, it's only the edible part, the sweet part, then what about the other 50%? So that's the way the Rashbam reads it. The Gemara answers, Shani hatam, dimi doraita truma yotahi. No, you don't understand over here. It turns out that the bitter part is also truma over here. It's not that the sweet part is truma and therefore the whole thing becomes truma. No, it's that the entire vegetable is truma. That's both the sweet part and the bitter part. Why are both parts truma? The Amar Rabbi Lo. Minayin l'torei minerali yafesh, trumato truma. There's a demand by truma to separate off or to take off fruit or vegetables when you're taking grains, when you're taking truma, from the same quality. The truma should represent or be equivalent to the quality of which you are, the tevel that you're removing it from. Now what happens if that's not the case? What happens if you take lower quality produce to be the truma for the items that you're trying to rectify or fix so that they are no longer tevel? So that's the question here. So mayin milatomim minara aliyafes. Someone takes lower quality on better quality. That it works. Shenemar, because the pasuk says lo tisu alav chait. You shouldn't have a chait b'harim chemet chelbol mimenu when you take off the chuma from it. So chelbol means the tov. When you take off the best, when you take off the quality that you are trying to remove, the best quality that you remove for the chuma. So if you do that, it'll be chuma. Velo tisu alav chait, and then you won't have a chait. I mean, the right way to do this, the right way to take off chuma, is to remove from the equivalent qualities or from the best, basically. So he has a question. If it's not kadosh, nesiot chait lama. So now, if you take, or you can infer from the pasuk says you will not have a chait, you will not have a sin, if you take off the chuma, the best of the fruit, the best of the quality, if you take that off for chuma, then you won't have a chait. Implied in the pasuk is if you don't do that, if you don't take off the best, you will have a chait. So Gemara says, wait a minute, if it's not chuma, why isn't it, what type of chait you have? So there's two possibilities of what could have happened here. You could have said that if he takes off lower quality produce, it's just not truma. So that's fine. If it's not truma, then why does the pasuk say that he'll have a chait? What type of sin is there? There's no sin. The truma did not work. So he has to be mafrish again. You just take truma again, or you take the proper truma. So there's no chait. The only way there could be a chait is if you're successful at removing the truma, but it's substandard, it's a subpar truma. So what's that case? That's a case where you take off lower quality produce. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting here. Eino kadosh, if the truma is not successful, nesiot chait lama. What type of nesiot chait is? Mikan. So what you can prove from here is the Torah minerali of fashe trumato truma. Then when you take off lower quality produce, it does work as truma. It works as truma, it's just not the optimal truma. And not only is it not the optimal, but tisalav chait. That's not the way we want to do it. That'll be counted against you. It'll be a chait that you did it in such a manner. But what do you see from here? You see from here that it's irrelevant. The quality of the produce is irrelevant in terms of making it into truma. So the answer onto Rav Sheshe's proof is that your proof is not a good proof. Because over here, the bitter and the sweet, they're both viable truma in a Torah. The bitter could be truma, the sweet could be truma. Now, what we want, or the optimal, is that the sweet be the truma. So over here, we say to you, listen, be mafrish extra from the sweet so that we ensure that you're really getting mina yafeh over here. But if you didn't, it wouldn't be a problem. And if you gave none of the yafeh, it would be fine also because you're allowed to be toreim, not allowed, but you are successful if you're poresh or mafrish, the mira'ah, ala tova or ala yafeh. If you take off that which is bad from the good or the lower quality from the better quality, it still works as truma. So your proof is not, it's not at v'chamor here. It's not a case where one is good truma, one's not good truma. It's a case where all of it is good truma from the beginning because it would work no matter what. So that's the explanation of the Rashbam. The Reed takes issue with the Rashbam. His basic question is, why would we ever worry about, when you take off one vegetable from a whole pile, why would we worry about in that vegetable the ratio between the sweet and the bitter? That's an assumption that one can make. And why would we worry about that? It's a natural way. We just do it based on a ratio basis. And we assume the bitter and the sweet match up with what the normal distribution of the pile is. We're not going to make you go and do extra. So the Reed suggests over here that the pshat in the Gemara is different. That Rabbi Yossi over here is talking about all the kshuim are sweet, but the one that he took off for truma is bitter. Not that all of them are bitter or have this relationship, ratio of the inside's bitter and the outside's sweet, but rather the whole pile's sweet and is edible. He happened to pick out the one that he gives for truma is bitter is an inedible zucchini or gourd. So now Rosh Hashanah says, I can show you now that even though he's taking off from that which is in inedible, it still functions as truma. Why? Because the outer side of even a bitter kishuim or even bitter gourds, the outer edge or the outer side of these vegetables is still edible. It may not be the best quality, but it's still edible. The inside true is bitter, and that, no matter what, is inedible. But the outside, even in a bitter zucchini or a bitter gourd, still the outside is still edible. So the outside part that is still edible is the at part. The chamor is the bitter, inedible part on the inside. And nevertheless, we say the whole zucchini functions as truma on the entire pile, on the other 49 that he left behind. So that's the way the Ri explains it here, is that it's not a question about the ratio of bitter to sweet, but rather it's about this one zucchini that he takes off that's a bitter zucchini. That bitter zucchini, he should have checked, he should have done it right to start with, and he doesn't. But if he does it, it's successful at Truma. Successful at Truma, that's a proof to Rav Sheshes that Ba'ad V'chamor works, because here you have a part that's edible, a part that's inedible, and yet we're saying it's Truma on the whole pile. So then along comes the Gemara and says, no, that's not the case. The case is that Truma works no matter what. That's what we see from the Torah. The Torah says that even when you give poor quality, when you give something that is not equivalent to the quality of which you're removing it from, nevertheless, it's still Truma. So therefore, it's not a proof to you, Rav Sheshes. It's not a case of Ad Chamor. Even if the whole thing was bitter and kimat inedible, it still wouldn't function as Truma, because we say, when you take Minara Yafeh, it still works as Truma. So it's not a proof to Rav Sheshes over here. Amalei Rav Mordechai the Ravashi. So Rav Mordechai says to Ravashi, Meiti Rav Avya Tuvya. Rav Avya had a question on this position here, or this idea of At V'chamor. Maseh B'chamesh Nashim. There's a case with five women. Ubehen Shtei Achayot. Amongst those five women are two sisters. V'liked Echad Kalkala Shel Te'enim. He was collected, a person here collected a basket full of figs. Now, these figs, Shalahen Aitai, was from their fields. He took it out of their fields, so he didn't own it. It was owned by the women. And he collects the figs. Vel Shvi'it, but it happened to be Shvi'it. So that makes a difference, because had it been theirs, generally, you cannot offer Kiddushim from the possessions of the woman who you're trying to marry. But over here, because it's Shvi'it, despite the fact that they own the fields and the trees, nevertheless, the fruits are Hefker. And since the fruits are Hefker, he can use them to be Mekadesh, the women, with this. Ramar, so he takes this basket of teinim, all of you are married to me with this basket. And one of them accepted the basket on behalf of all of them. So now you have five women here. They accepted a large basket of teinim. There's a pruta, there's a sufficient amount of consideration here in the basket to marry all five women. One of the women accepts it on behalf of the others. So now they should all be married to this man. The problem is, we have one problem here, is that there happen to be two sisters there. So the Amruch Chachamim, Ein Achayot Mekudashot. The sisters are out of the picture, they are not married to him. But the Gemara refers from this, Achayot Hu De'ein Mekudashot, Hanachayot Mekudashot. It's the sisters who are not married. But when it comes to the other women, they are married over here. It does work. So Vamai, why should it work? At V'chamorhi. It's exactly the case of At V'chamor. I mean, you have a case where the Kiddushin is given to all five women. For two of the women, it fails. For the sisters, it's going to fail. For the other three women, it will be successful. So you have exactly a case of At V'chamor. He granted the entire Kiddushin to all five of them. For two of them, it won't work. For three of them, it works. And we say, yet it still works for those three. So you see from here again that it seems to be by At V'chamor. It works. It's not a problem. It works in its entirety. So what's the problem with the Achayot over here? Why are the sisters not Mikidushot over here? So this is based on the Gemara in Kiddushin, the assumption that Kol Kiddushim has to, or Kiddushim that are offered have to be Ru'im Libiyah. It has to be that a marriage or a Kiddushin that is started that can be consummated. The problem with marrying sisters is that you're not allowed to marry two sisters. So by definition, if you marry two sisters, one of them you will not be able to have Biyah with them. One of them you will not be able to have or consummate the marriage with. Over here, when he does it simultaneously, since he couldn't marry them one after other, so too, when he does it simultaneously, he can't marry these two sisters. And this is Kedushim Shaloni Tana Biyah, and therefore it fails by the sisters. It works by the other women because they are third parties that have nothing to do with these sisters, and therefore he can marry them. But by the sisters, it fails. So this is the case, Ve'ad V'chamorhu. So then, Amalei, he says, back to him, he responds, this was from what we had above the question that was brought, Amar Rav Mordechai, the Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi responds to Rav Mordechai. So Rav Ashi says back to him, Hainu dechazai Rav Huna bar Avya b'chalmo. That is, now that's why I had a dream about Rav Huna bar Avya. In a dream, I don't remember why, or I don't understand why I had this dream. The multi Rav Avya tiyufta. It must be because this question of Rav Avya was going to come before me. So the dream, I didn't understand the dream at the time, but now I understand the dream that I saw about about Rav Huna bar Avya, because he was indicating to me, or he's implying to me, that a question from Rav Avya will come before me. Or you could suggest that it's actually Rav Avya who came to him in the dream, and Rav Huna bar Avya doesn't mean Rav Huna literally, but like the son of Rav Avya, which means his position, his dat, or what his whatever he's going to present before me. So Rav Huna bar Avya means that Rav Avya would appear to me and put his position before me, and that's what's happening over here. Kimna, he says, but we have a solution to that problem. There's no problem with this. Why? Because we set up the case there. The man, when he granted the gift or the basket over here to generate the kiddushin, he said it, or he formulated it in a way that excluded the sisters. He said, whoever I could consummate a marriage with here will be married to me. Well, since he can't consummate the marriage with the two achayot, they're excluded. So the only people he offered kiddushin to were the women who are not the sisters. So it's not a case of at v'chamor over here. Rather, it's a case of simply at. There's only good kiddushin over here because he's only offering kiddushin to those individuals that he can't marry. So that means for the other three women that he can't marry, he's offering kiddushin. But to the sisters themselves, he's not offering kiddushin. So that would be the solution. That will no longer be a question of ad v'chamor. So now the Gemara continues the conclusion of the Gemara. There is no conclusion to the Gemara over here. Although the Gemara, we paskin like Rav Nachman, who says ad v'chamor is kana mechsa. And we also paskin like before. In the previous Gemara, we paskin like Rav Nachman, which is a mezakeh le ubar, the kishateleid. If someone gives a gift to an ubar when he will be born, kanak Rav Nachman, it works like Rav Nachman. Not while he's an ubar, you cannot grant him a gift. But if you say when he is born, it will be a gift to him. That will work like Rav Nachman. So we paskin like Rav Nachman, which we generally do by dinei. We paskin like Rav Nachman. So in both cases, we paskin like Rav Nachman. The previous case, that you can grant a gift to an ubar after he is born. And you can, over here in our case, in at v'chamor, in a case where you grant a gift to two parties, one party will fail with, one party is successful with, then we say over there that the successful party gets mechsa, gets half. He doesn't get the whole thing. Whatever the failed party loses their half, it doesn't work. But the other half does go through, and it works for that party. So we pass on like Rav Nachman. Now there's the next case in the Gemara. Now it could be related to the case before. It could be totally independent. It says, "How udamar lalad bitu?" Someone says to his wife, "Nichsay laich ulavanaich," that all my possessions will go to you and your children. So again, over here, it's not clear. If the children are already born, then this has nothing to do with the cases that we had before. This is a totally separate issue. Could be that, since we're passing like Rav Nachman, it could be that this is the case where the children are not yet born. So then the gift fails by the children, but will still be successful by his wife. The only question is, what's the division? How do we divide between his wife and his children? When he says, you and my children will get all my possessions, how does the you relate to the children? Amar Rav Yosef, Kanta Mechsa, she gets half. The wife, when the husband offers to her and then to the Banim, he's taking, there's two parties enumerated here. If I look at the whole, if I have two parties, I split it 50-50. So the woman will get 50% of the property, and the children then will divide the remaining 50% of the property. So that's what Rav Yosef says. Again, if the children are yet to be born, then the case would be a case like Rav Nachman, that it's at v'chamor. It's a case where the children will fail. The gift to the children will fail because they're not alive yet. But the gift to his wife will succeed, and he will get the 50. She will get 50%. She'll get that 50%. So now, Vamar Rav Yosef na min Allah. How can I prove to you that's the case? The Tanya, we have a brisa, Rebbe Omer, by Tal Aron uvanav. When it comes to the lechem apanim, it says that the lechem apanim will be granted to Aron and his children. Mechsa de Aron, umechsa de vanav. Aron gets half of the lechem apanim, and the regular kohanim get the other half. So you see again here, anytime you enumerate people, you draw some sort of equivalence in the division between them. So Aron equals Banav. So therefore Aron gets 50% and Banav gets 50%. So Amar Leh Abaye, Abaye says, Bishlam Atam. That makes sense by Aron because he's a Bar Chaluko. Lachi Parit by Rachmana Mishkal Palga. Wait a minute. If the Tepasu did not lay out that Aron was entitled to the Lechem Apanim, he would still get Lechem Apanim. Why? Because that Kohen Gadol is a Kohen plus. He's still a regular Kohen, he's just a Kohen plus. So he would divide, he has ownership, or he has a portion in the Lechem Apanim, even without being the Kohen Gadol, just from being a regular Kohen. So the Pasuk said nothing, Aaron would also have gotten a portion of the Lechem Apanim. So now if the Pasuk goes out of its way to enumerate Aaron, it must be that they're giving him some sort of upgrade. So by Aaron, where he already has a portion of the Lechem HaPanim, the upgrade would make him a 50% partner, to make him get half, and the Banim, the other Kohanim, get the other half, or the 50%. But that's not true over here. Isha, la bat Yerushahi. The woman in this case is not entitled to any Yerusha. Meaning, had the husband said nothing, all the property would have gone to the children. That's derech yerusha. The woman has no shaychut to the property over here. So now when the husband comes along and includes the woman in the gift, she's upgrading her. He's upgrading her from nothing to getting a portion. Well, if you upgrade her from nothing to get a portion, what type of portion are you granting her? You're granting her a portion that's equivalent to the portions of the other children. So da'i shitok echad min abanim. Therefore, she should only get like one. She should be get a portion like the other children. So again, the concept is that if you grant a gift to someone or you upgrade their rights, we're going to say, okay, let's look at their core base rights, and then we're going to upgrade them, give them something more than that. So by the Kohanim, where the Kohen Gadol already has rights to Lechem Panim, we're upgrading his rights, we're upgrading it to the point where he'll get 50% of all the Lechem Panim, and the other Kohanim will divide the other 50%. Over here by the woman, when she gets nothing, if we're going to upgrade her, the upgrade is that she gets something. So if you're going to get her something, we're going to give her like she's like one of the children. If there are five children here, she'll be number six, and they'll divide the property up into six parts, and she'll get one part like the other five children get. They'll divide into six portions, and each one will get a portion. So you need to remember, is that really true? It's the case in Nardov, Agve Shmuel Palko. And over there, Shmuel Paskin like Rav Yosef and gave half to the woman. But Tveri, a case in Tveri, Agve Rav Yochanan Palko, the same thing. And Rabbi Yochanan also granted half to the woman. Vitu, and we have another case. Kiyata Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef Amar. Yes, there was a case. How to make lilo? There was the cost of creating or forming a crown for the king. So the Caesar, the Caesar, or whoever the governing official was, decided to impose on his subjects that they had to pay for his crown. So he went ahead to Shadu de Bey Malko. So the king's palace, or the king himself, the government decided to place it out. Bule Vastruge. They placed it, as the Rashbam translated here, the rich and the ministers. So the rich and the ministers were obligated to pay towards the cost of providing a crown for the king. So Amar Rebbe, Nitvu Abule Palga, Bistruge Palga. So Rebbe says, okay, when he imposed this obligation on these individuals, he says Abule Nistruge. Abule Nistruge, I'm talking about the rich and the ministers. That means that 50% of the cost will be borne by the rich, and 50% of the cost will be borne by those that are the ministers. So here again, you see that when it comes to dividing, when you have two parties that are mentioned, we divide it evenly. We always make it 50-50. So I'm a Rebbe, Nitvu Abule Palga, Bistruge Palga. Hachi Hashtag. I'm going to say, you can't compare. This is not a good proof. Why? There in the beginning, when the king wrote the decree or the imposed this cost, he said only on the rich. He imposed the obligation to pay for his crown simply on the rich. The ministers, I don't know if this is what he wrote, that the ministers should help out a little bit, or the ministers themselves have the generosity, decided to contribute towards the making of the crown. So there to be other Malko, Davaka Messiah. So then the king found out that these ministers were helping. So then after that, when he writes the document that obligates them, and he finds out that the ministers are involved, he says, Hashemakakatve. Over now he writes, Abuli Vastruge. So now he writes that the Abuli and Istruge. I mean, if the original obligation was only on the rich, on the Abuli, then all of a sudden the Istruge came and got him involved. So now the king writes the document or the decree that everybody has to be included, both the ministers and the rich. And then remember, the Hanipago, that when he writes it, that must mean now he's upgrading the ministers to have to pay for half of it. Because the original sanction or imposition that was placed by the king on these individuals was only on the rich. So now when he gets wind of the fact that the minister's involved, again, either because he asked them originally to be partially involved or because they volunteered to be involved, and now he's writing to upgrade them and say both of them are going to be involved, in that instance, then we're going to give 50% to each, we're going to obligate each party in 50% of the obligation. So this is not, over there, it's the unique circumstances that made it that we split it 50-50, but there we're not going to have a proof from it. So, Meitiv, Rabbi Zeir says, is it really true that we always divide 50-50? Ha'omer haray lai mincha. A person decides he wants to bring a mincha to Mikdash, and he says voluntarily, I'm going to bring a mincha. Me'a yisaron, 100 yisaron. Lavi b'shnei kelim. I'm going to bring it in two dishes. I'm going to bring this mincha of 100 yisaron in two dishes. Mevi shishim b'kliachad. Rabbi b'kliachad. He splits it up, 60-40. Brings 60 in one dish, 40 in the other dish. Mevi chamishim b'kliachad. B'chamishim b'kliachad. If he brings it as 50-50, yatsa. It works. Now, im hevi in, the Gemara says, that's bidi'evid, we say that he brings it 50-50, it works. L'chadchila lo. He should, but if it's l'chadchila, he shouldn't bring it 50-50. V'isachadatka kol hi'agavno, if you say any time that we enumerate two items, like here, two kelim, palgo, we split it 50-50, oh, afilo l'chilanami. Also over here, you should be able to split it 50-50. You should put 50 isaron in one kelim, 50 isaron in the other key. Why are we making him or demanding of him to put it at 60-40? My says, Achi Ashto, you can compare the cases. Over there, there's a halachic implication, or there's a a guide by Menachot that changes the dynamic. What's that? We can see from his gift, he wanted to give the biggest, best mincha. So that's why he said, I'm going to bring a mincha of 100 yisaron. Then at the end of his sentence, he said, I'm going to bring it in two utensils. That is, he knows that you're not allowed to bring it in one kli. Why? Because we know from the Gemara Menachot that the larger size mincha that you can bring is 60 yisaron. That is because the Gemara says that up to 60 yisaron, it can be mixed well. The flour, the oil, the water can all be mixed well. In that case, above 60, it cannot be mixed well. So Gemara says the cap of a mincha is 60. So he says 100. So he knows the cap is 60. So he says, let me bring the biggest, best mincha I can, and then whatever's left over, that 100, I'll bring the other kli. So the biggest amount he can bring, he does. He brings 60, which is the biggest mincha he can bring. And the fact that he said 100 now, the other 40 he puts in the other kli. So again, there it's unique to the halachic circumstances why he splits it 60-40, because of the dinim by menachot. It's not because... Otherwise, we generally don't distribute, when we have enumerated two items, we don't distribute it 50-50, so that can't govern over here. So Gemara says, the locha is like Rav Yosef in these three instances. One of those three instances is right here. That is, all three of these three instances is actually found here in Bava Batra. Mechsa is our case right here. Okay, so Mechsa, which is Rav Yosef says, when it's 50-50, right, the locha is that, I'm saying, when you have two parties that are enumerated, we assume that each party gets 50% of it. We divide it up in half. So that's the locha like Rav Yosef ben Mechsa. Inyan is in the previous parak in Yishnu Chalim. We had that when do we consider something to be closed or the transaction ended is when they move me inyan li inyan. Once they change inyanim, that's already once we consider the kinyan to be done or whatever we've been discussing to be done. So that's the case of Yosef. And the last one in Sadeh was in the first parak where we discussed about Bei Metzra. When we talked about Bar Metzra, that a person who has a adjacent property has priority, we give him priority there. There the Gemara talks about Bei Naso, if they, one of the brothers, one of the Shutfim has property that's from his in-laws or from his family on one side, that we would give him priority or precedence to take the property on that side to go to Dina de Bar Metzra. So in those three cases, the locha is like Rav Yosef. So generally, we know that when it comes to Machlokas Rabba and Rav Yosef, the locha is like Rabba. But in these three instances, the locha is like Rav Yosef. Tosfos pointed out in Yishnu Chalim that here we see that the locha of Yosef, even when Rabba's not arguing. So it's really, the Tosfot says this has nothing to do with Rabba and Rav Yosef. This happens to be in Bava Batra. In Bava Batra, in these three instances, the locha is like Rav Yosef. We have a separate principle everywhere else in Shas that Rabba and Rav Yosef, halocha ki Rabba. Now that principle will dictate everywhere else in Shas. That principle has application to other machlokot between Rabba and Rav Yosef. It really comes up, or the major time, or major issue it has, is actually the Gemara in Bava Kama, and the machlok is about Shomer Aveda. A Shomer Aveda is he Shomer Sachar, that's Rav Yosef's opinion, because of Prut of Rav Yosef, and Rabba's opinion is that he's a Shomer Chinam. So most of the poskim over there pass on like Rav Yosef, that he is a Shomer Sachar because of Prut of Rav Yosef. Tosfos takes issue over there. He says, how could it be? How could it be that you're passing like Rav Yosef? We know the principle of Rabba, Rav Yosef, Aloch, Rav Yosef. Okay, Rabba, I'm sorry. Aloch is like Rabba, so we should pass like Rabba. And therefore, the reason says, Aloch is like Rabba, that he's a Shomer Chinam. And he says, the proof is not from our Gemara here, that the Aloch is like Rabba in every other place. Because again, he says, this is unique to Bava Batra. When they say Aloch is like Rav Yosef, it's not because connected Rabba, Aloch is like Rav Yosef, because in some of these instances, like right now, Rabba doesn't argue on him, and nevertheless, we say Aloch is Rav Yosef. But rather from the principle that's established other places in Shas, that Rabba is Rav Yosef, Aloch is Rabba. And therefore, Tosu says, the conclusion by Shomer Veda should be like Rabba, that he's a Shomer Chinam. Okay, next case. How do Shadar Piske Dishra the Beite? Someone who sent silk pieces of clothing or cloth to his house, and he doesn't say how to divide it up or who it belongs to. So Amar Rabbi Ami, Rabbi says, Aruim Lebanim Lebanim. That which is of, you know, a male looking or a male type of clothing, that goes to the boys. Ruin Lebanot, that which is for the girls, Lebanot will go to the girls. So if he hasn't defined anything, then they distribute it amongst all the family members, meaning all the family members, what is appropriate. If it's for boys, it goes to all the boys. If it's for girls, it goes to the girls. That's only if he doesn't have a daughter-in-law in the house. If he has a daughter-in-law in the house, then we assume that he gives it to his kala. So, whoa, what's going on here? He's going to give to his daughter-in-law over his own children? So when it says, Ibnate lo nisivin, if his daughters are not married, lo shavak benate mishadah lekalate. If his daughter's not married, then he would give precedence. He would give it to his daughters over his daughter-in-law. So if he has unmarried daughters where he's still responsible for them, then he would give priority to his daughters over his daughter-in-law. Once his daughters have been married off, Then when it comes to in the house, when he's sending materials, he will send it to his daughter-in-law. That's what he is responsible for. Because in their time, unlike today, but in their time when a woman got married, the father was responsible, he gave a dowry. Once he had given a dowry, the woman went to live with the husband's family. So she became a part of the husband's family. So his daughters that go off and get married, he's no longer responsible for. He's no longer really the one who gives them gifts and provides for them. That's the husband's family. What he does have to provide for, he provides for his daughter-in-law, who now has joined his family. So his daughter-in-law is the one that he will give precedence to, assuming that he has no single daughters in the house. Someone who says that all my possessions will be to my children. So he said children in plural. Havalei bra ubrata. He has a son and a daughter. So he uses the male form plural to say that I will gift all my possessions to my benai. But he has only a son, one son, and one daughter. So mi karu incha the bra benai. Does a person use the term benai in the plural for a single son? And when he says I'm giving the gift, he's only giving it to his son. Or maybe people do not use the plural form when they're talking about a single son. And he's trying to include his daughter. He's saying, my children, right? My children in the plural. I mean, in the Hebrew, it's not necessarily that way. In English, you have a gender-neutral term called children. But here, rather, it's ben and bat. So over here, he's using banai, meaning the plural form of the male, versus, benotai, which is the plural form of the female. The problem in Hebrew is that the male plural form is used when you both have males and females as well. So over here, when he's using the male plural form, we don't know if he's using it because people call their single child or one son in the plural form, or if the plural form in the male side means also to include his daughter. So Amar Abaye, I'll prove it to you, because Tashma, the Torah says, Ubnei Dan, says, who are the children of Dan in plural? Chushim, right? Chushim names one child. It says, Bnei Dan in the plural, and says he has one child, one son. Maybe we can explain away this problem like Be'ichizkiya. So that the case here is that they are plentiful like the chushim of the kaneh. Whatever the chushim of the kaneh is, either that they grow many together, or that the leaves of the kanim of these reeds are plentiful, or the knots on the reeds are plentiful. Whatever the kaneh means, chushim shel kaneh means that he multiplied, meaning that chushim had numerous children. So even though they were not born yet, it was a derech nevuah, bnei dan, that chushim would provide multitudes to dan. It's a lot more rough, we can prove it from here. In Bamidbar it says, ubnei falu, again in the plural form, and it says, Eliyav, a single son. We can say from Divrei Yamim, it says, Bnei Eitan, Azariah. So again, it uses the plural form of Bnei for Eitan, and then it just enumerates one child, Azariah. So from here, we can see that when people do use the plural form, even when they're referring to a single son. Someone who says that my possessions are to my children. Havalei bra ubarbara. He had a son and a grandson. How this grandson came about is not clear. It's not clear whether he is the son of the son, or he's the son of another son who had passed away. But either way, he has a son and a grandson here, and now he grants all of his property to his children. So now we have my ask, Kari Incha the Bar Bra. Do people call their grandchildren their children? Although, or not? So Rabbi Chaviva Amar Kari Incha the Bar Bra Bra. Rabbi Chaviva says yes, right? Bnei Banim, Hari Enka Banim. So people do call their grandchildren by the term children. Mar Bar Vashi Amar Lo Kari Incha the Bar Bra Bra. So people do not call their grandchildren Bar Bra Bra. They don't call them children. So Tanya Kavasi Demar Ravashi, we have a brace that supports the position of Ravashi. Hamudar Hamuder Hana Mi Banim Mutar Bnei Banim. A person who takes a neder not to get Hana from his children, or he's not willing to accept Hana from his children, he's not precluded from accepting Hana from his grandchildren. So you see here that they're separate. That grandchildren and children are separate entities. Ah, what about the principle? We do have a principle that Bnei Banim Hari Hen Kibanim. So we have to say that is a halachic framework. That when we say b'nei banim hari banim, that's not in lashon b'nei adam. That's not the way that people converse or the way people speak. When people speak, they say children and they say grandchildren. But from the Torah's perspective of zera and offspring, then b'nei banim hari inka banim. And it'll have implications like by Puri Rivia. It'll have implications like by Yibum. That b'nei banim hari hen ki banim. And also by Yerusha, we saw that case. So it has implications in terms of the halacha that b'nei banim hari inka banim. But when it comes to lashon b'nei adam, when it comes to speaking, we're talking about here a person guaranteeing a gift to his children, or we're talking about a case of moder ana. In all those cases, we will say banim are distinct from b'nei banim. So the next Mishnah begins. So here he leaves over, a past person passes away, and he leaves over children who are of age, and children that were minors. Tosus points out over here that it's really lav davka that has to be gdolim ktanim. It could even be by gdolim ui gdolim. It just means that children who are either different stature or different abilities over here. Hishbicho gdolim et nechasim. The gdolim go ahead and improve the estate, meaning that the estate has yet to be divided. They invest in the estate, and the value of the estate goes up. The benefit accrues to the entire estate, and then all the brothers will divide up that value that they've added. Imam Ru, if they come, we'll explain this like the Rashbam now. Ru ma sheniach abo. They go to Beis Din, or they go before Edim, and they say, look, this is the estate that's been left to us. Anu osim ve'ochlim. So they say, listen, we're ready to divide up the property. Beis Din is, for some reason, delaying in the division, and we're ready to divide. So we're going to go, and we are going to invest in our property. So the Rishbam suggests over here that they are going to, ready to divide, we're going to take from our portion, and we're going to invest in our portion, and whatever they benefit, or whatever they improve in their portion, will accrue to their benefit. So that's what Gemara says, Ishbichu Datzman. That goes to them, to those older brothers that do the investment. V'chein Aisha, she Ishbicha Denechasim, also a woman who improves the estate. Ishbicha Deemtza, she improves the estate for the benefit, or the to the benefit of even the Yatomim. Why the woman has ownership, here will be a discussion in the Gemara tomorrow, but whatever reason the woman has some sort of rights in the estate over here, so because of that, if she goes and uses the money of the estate and invests in the estate and the value goes up, the value accrues to everyone who has a portion in the estate. Imam Rav, she says, Ru mashiniach li bali, she says, look, this is what my husband left me, I want my portion, I'm taking my portion out, but for some reason they are unable or it has not yet to be divided, then, Rino sevochot, I am going to work on my portion, I'm going to invest in my portion, and I'm going to keep whatever I do. Whatever improvement she makes will accrue to herself and not to the estate as a whole. Now again, the Rashbam pointed out here, pointed out in tomorrow's daf, this is all when she has not taken mizonot out of the estate. It's when she's not taking food out of the estate because the chamim were gozer. The chamim were actually made a takana that if she doesn't take her ketubah and she takes mizonot out of the estate, she trades her mizonot for her masa yadayim. And therefore, if she takes mizonot from the estate, her masa yadayim are then given to the estate. So now if she invests in the estate or she improves the estate, in that case, she's improving her masa yadayim belong to the estate and any improvement she makes will accrue to the whole estate. So it has to be here where she hasn't taken mizonot out of the estate. So Amar Rav Chaviva, Brei de Rav Yosef. Chaviva says the name of Rav Yosef, Brei de Rava, Mishmei de Rava. Lo Shano, this case here, where we say that all the benefit that accrues to the estate goes to the estate, El Sheshibchu Nechasim, Achmat Nechasim. That's if they made the investment, they took money from the estate, and they used monies from the estate to improve the estate. About Shibchu Nechasim, Achmat Atzman. But on the other hand, if they make a personal investment, they take their own money and invest it to improve the value of the estate, then Hishbichu Atzman. It's clear here that it goes all to themselves, because they didn't use the money of the estate. They're making their own investment. Their own investment improves, so therefore they're going to get the monies out of it. Is that really true? If their father only left them an odiani, the Rashbam says an odiani is a bore, is a some sort of watering hole or watering pit where they distributed water to all the fields and they made money that way. Because you have its cover, so you just have to watch over and make sure that people only took what they paid for. So they rent it out so people can draw water from there. If one of the brothers goes and operates this water a source, then whatever benefits or any profits he gets goes into the estate as a whole. The only reason that they're making money here is because he's working by himself. I mean, he's sitting there and doing the work. So it's like he's investing his own time or his own money in there. So why is it going? It's going to the whole estate. So when it says, shiny or jiani, and jiani is different, tuta hu da'avido. It's made to be watched. I mean, that the only thing you do to have to make money is to sit there to make sure nobody who's not supposed to or any inappropriate person is coming to take the water. So afilu ktani, nami matsu, mentally, and the Ketanim themselves could watch over this pit. So now this comes back to a number of items. I want to just point out one is the Rabbeinu Tam, first of all, disagrees with the Rashbam. He says that this Odiani here is not a watering source, but rather it's a some sort of platform and bed that they used to use to watch the fields. So just like the older brothers can watch the fields, so too the younger brothers can watch the fields with these platforms. Now, going back to the Mishnah, the Ri in the Mishnah takes issue with the Rashbam's explanation. The Rashbam explained that when do they get to keep the property, when do they keep the money for themselves? When they demand to divide the property, and then Beis Din's unable to, or is nitatzel, as the Rashbam says, that they are somehow delayed in dividing the property, then the brothers, if they go ahead and work it, they get it for their own benefit and not to the benefit of the estate. So the assumption, it's not explicit in the Rashbam, but the Ri says, it sounds like from the Rashbam, that they take their chelek, their portion of the property, they invest that portion, and then they improve that portion. That's what they get. They improve their portion, they get the value of their portion, but not that they get the improvement to the entire estate. If their investment from their portion improves the entire estate, they will only get the benefit that accrues to their specific chelek, but not to the whole estate. The Rishon says that he doesn't think that's the case, and he quotes the Rivam, who he thinks is the right explanation here, that the Rivam says that he gets all the benefit to the entire estate. That means if one of the brothers, the Gdolim over here, goes ahead and invests his chelek in the estate, and then if somehow he improves the entire estate, then all the improvement will belong to him. Because he said, I already asked to divide, and I'm working here, and all the benefit is coming from me. I'm investing my own chelek, the benefit is coming from me, so therefore it belongs to me. So he asks, how is this different than other cases? We have cases where someone goes down illegally into someone else's property, or shutfim, where one of the shutfim goes down and improves the property. In all these cases, we say that the benefit does not accrue just to the one shutaf, or to the person who goes down and works someone's field illegally. He gets back his costs, but the other person gets all the benefits. So why over here are we giving entirety of the estate, the benefit of the estate, to this one brother, or the brothers, the older brothers that invest, and not to the whole estate? Why is it different over here? So that's what they read, differentiates, and it's at the end of our Gemara here, you can see this, he differentiates between whether the other party could have done the same thing. In the case of the Shutfim, or in the case of the Balabai, where the person legally comes down and works his property, in all of those cases, the person could have done it for themselves. The Balabai could have done that for his property, invested himself in that property, and gotten a benefit. In the case of the Shutfim, the other Shutaf could have done this and also benefit from the property. So the fact that one Shutaf did it, or this person came down illegally and did it, it should not accrue, the benefit that should not accrue to that one individual, it should accrue to all the parties, because every party had the ability to do it. That's not true in this case of the estate. In the case of the estate, the parties are not equal. The Gdolim can do things that the Ketanim cannot do. And therefore, when the Gdolim invest, they're investing themselves, and they say, the Ketanim, we'll leave it for the Ketanim. The Ketanim wouldn't do this. Since they wouldn't do this, all the benefits should accrue to us and solely to us, because the investment was done by us and done by us for ourselves, and the Ketanim could not have replicated this. They could not have done this. Therefore, they're not entitled to any portion of it. And that's the Gemara's answer over here. The Gemara's answer over here about that the Ketanim could do the Netiruta. The fact that the Ketanim could watch or generate the profit, the Sechar, just like the Gdolim, puts them then onto equal footing with the Gdolim. And if they're on equal footing with the Gdolim, and they say, we could have done it just as well as you could, then when the Gdolim do it, all the benefit accrues to the entirety of the estate, to all parties, because every party could have done it for themselves or could have created this Sechar. The time when we say not, when one party creates the Sechar and he is unique in creating that schar, then we say that that belongs to him when he's already asked, according to the Rashbam, to divide it. And according to the Ri, again, in this case, it's where he's doing something that he's offered to the Ketanim and they don't do it, or whoever's representing the Ketanim don't come in and do it alongside of these individuals. This proof is actually from the Gemara tomorrow, which we're going to see, took out a property, invested in the property, did something that was uniquely for himself, and yet he gets the benefit of the entirety of the property, not just from his chelik, he gets the benefit of the entire property. So Tos says, it sounds like the Rivam and not like the Rashbam. I will say the Rashbam does not explicitly say that you only get the benefit. He says he invests his chelik, he doesn't say that he only gets out the benefit from his chelik, but the Ri interprets the Rashbam that way. It might sound a little bit like that way, you can infer it from the Rashbam, but it's not explicit in the Rashbam that way.